I'm into the Buddha, I'm into the Dharma, I'm into the Sangha. So, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm curious to see how today goes. I'm looking forward to meeting you all here, I guess. So the topic this week has to do, kind of arose out of Sunday morning last week. We had the Sangha Forum, and Gyoko talked about the process of succession and how she's, you know, moving towards retirement, and we're in the process of choosing and installing a new abbot. And, you know, that was, this rough plan was kind of laid out around 6 years ago with the strategic plan, and then refined with a succession team, committee, whatever, group, over a couple of years. And so it's been in place for a while now. It's not new. But it's starting to be palpable, kind of noticeable, and not just this sort of in the distant future amorphous kind of a thing that might happen. And so there was a fair amount of energy around it last week, and people wanted to ask questions about it. And so this is kind of an opportunity. I mean, it is an opportunity. But I'm going to say a little bit first to kind of get the ball rolling. One of the questions that came up last week was Madeline asked why I wanted to be abbot. And so I gave a little bit of an answer, but I want to give a little bit more of an answer now. One thing that, you know, shows up when I think about that question is I remember a time, probably in my first year, maybe 2 years of practice, doing Sanzen with Gyokuko, my teacher, and just kind of having this, like looking behind the curtain in some way, and just realizing that, wow, like, what she's doing right now is really, really good for her. Just how much leverage she was receiving for her own internal work, and just appreciated that. It really stuck with me. Another thing that comes up is that the word wanting is not the right word. it's pretty sticky, pretty dicey. And to some degree it's kind of a both a Zen and you know, larger, like kind of a spiritual taboo to want that in some ways. You know, we never measure up, right? We're always human, we're always flawed, we're always inadequate in trying to trying to be a good abbot, trying to do Oryoki, trying to explain emptiness, right? That's not the whole truth, but that's part of the truth. And also, wanting is kind of an odd word because, practically speaking, this is a really a job that's very difficult and challenging and tiring and excruciating at times. And I've had a glimpse of that myself, and I've lived in very close proximity to Kyogen and Gyokko over the last 20 years and watched how it's been for them. So there's an obviousness that I feel in relation to this, like, yes, of course. But there's not like a giddiness, like, oh, I can't wait. It's something different. It is what's next, right? As practice has deepened for me, the horizon has changed. Like what my practice is, what my sphere of influence is. And my practice is this Sangha and this temple, right? It's, you know, I didn't decide that, and it's not a, it's not something that I'm controlling, but that's actually what's on my plate right now. That's how I experience it. So, that's a little bit more about that question. In terms of, so in the bulletin that went out, the Thursday little blurb about this week at Dharma Rain, there were two links in there. One was a description of the job description for Abbott. We actually have a job description. And there's also a link to the succession plan. I'm going to just read a little bit of the job description. So the nugget of it is, the abbot is a spiritual director of Dharma Rain Zen Center, must be ordained and transmitted as a Soto Zen priest. She or he determines matters of liturgy and teaching and gives direction to the membership on these matters. As the leader of the center, the abbot is responsible for supporting and promoting organizational goals as described in the strategic plan. The abbot is subject to regular performance reviews by the board of directors. And then it has a summary of like what they're supposed to do and how you know if they're qualified to do it and, you know, a couple other things. And basically there's dharmic tasks and there's administrative tasks, and they're both kind of rolled up together. So being a monk for me means that I'm I've taken on this practice and this form of practice for life. It's a life of renunciation, of staying in public, staying on schedule, responding to what is needed actually. It's not a 40-hour work week, although the position description says it's 1.0 FTE, hours variable. So, a little bit of false advertising on that one. It's not a seasonal or occasional thing. It's life. And being an abbot takes that and it broadens it and intensifies it and deepens it. That commitment to Sangha and to temple. And I think, you know, we all feel that to some extent. I mean, someone who shows up here for the first time, you know, just by virtue of having had an experience with other people, there's a bond there. There's some shared experience. So it's something like that. I think most of us orient towards our own practice most of the time. And how I feel that I'm oriented is towards this larger emergent practice. So another thing that came up last week is that I'm homegrown and I'm a work in progress. I see these as, you know, these facts as positive. I trust our system, our practice that we have here. I know I have plenty of delusions and blind spots and, you know, whatever, triggers, preferences to work on and clean up. And I'm happy to be challenged and questioned. It's not like sitting here right now isn't light and easy, but there's still a comfort with it. I mean, it's kind of obvious So I know how it works, and I know how this process of refining and distilling works to transmute what is not there yet into something else. And I've seen it work so reliably in this container that I'm happy to give myself to that. And I'm happy to give myself to that because I've been shaped by this container. Right? It's a very particular imprint. And especially for the last decade, I've been shaping myself to help hold this container. So I'm not a finished product. I have made and I will make mistakes. But I'm also not going to deny that I'm ready to do this and that I'm going to be good at it. So for the Dharma part of it, I want to say that I'm deeply inspired by people working hard. That willingness to challenge yourself and be upended by practice. I want to support that work. And it's really uncomfortable. There's a tendency to want to, be nourished, be resourced, be soothed by Sangha, and that's an important part of it. But there's also getting pushed by Sangha and getting to, this is also a place to see your own suffering in exquisite clarity. And I appreciate that tension. I think that that's really a necessity for this to be a place that is effective. So I'm okay with it when it's messy, right? I want us to be authentic, I want us to be real. Sometimes that's disturbing, par for the course. That's why we have seniors, that's why we have teachers around to watch how they handle getting triggered and what Dharma might look like in that situation. And when we as a Sangha are doing that, we're stretching our ability to be with our own life and be with the world around us. And that capacity to witness, to be attentive to, is something that is drastically needed. And I want us to be able to offer that. To be able to be affected but maintain our access to wisdom. And I also want to say that I'm deeply proud of the Sangha for how we balance and hold many different versions of practice. It's not one thing, it's not one way. We offer a lot. And we're not a idealistic or elitist Sangha, right? It's open to anybody to come in and get what they need, what they actually need. So that's pretty distinctive. It's also distinctive that this Sangha has done more to recognize and empower lay teachers than probably any other Zen Sangha in America. And we have one of the most rigorous and conservative monastic training approaches to monastic training in American Zen. So it's a very interesting combination, and I'm proud of it, and I'm deeply committed to the different aspects of it working together. So I think that's what I brought, and now I'm very curious to see what you brought.
You mentioned the two links, and I wonder if you could read the nugget of the second link on the succession plan.
Oh.
If you had a nugget version of that.
I didn't print that one out, but basically what's happening is, so Gyoko wants to retire in about 3 years. I've started my Kese term, so this is, I'm doing a year-long trial of, okay, this is kind of what it's like to be an abbot. And so that started in February. It will end in December. There will be kind of a testing ceremony. And if that goes well, if I pass, then Gyoko will decide whether she wants to nominate me as abbot to the board. If she does, then the board will vote. If the board votes yes, then that gets sent to the whole Sangha to ratify. So that's the basic process. If I have to be qualified before she can nominate me, so getting this Kese term, this kind of 1 year trial period, is the last step to be qualified.
And then you'll be co-abbot or abbot?
Then I will be co-abbot until Gyoko retires. Yeah.
Hello. many times people have to take on roles and drop who they are, how they are, to really fulfill them deeply. And I think the word sacrifice means to make sacred, because many times people would have to give up pretty deeply in order to make a space or role very sacred. And there's some hop between being what you are, mm-hmm. or what you have been, to fulfilling that role. I know that just in thinking about meeting Kyogen, for example, with Daison, mm-hmm. like he would inhabit the space and really meet us genuinely and right on. And I know that that came from a lot of letting go type of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of spinning around a certain thing, but I'm wondering what your general sense of what your let go is to make that role sacred for our Sangha, because we need that space filled.
So you're asking what's my sacrifice there?
Yeah, I'm asking what's your sense of in that transition towards uh-huh. being full abbot. Uh-huh. What's your sense of places that you need to go?
Well, when Kyogen died 2 years ago, it shifted the equation a lot. And I'd already taken up a lot of the kind of administrative end of it, and so I could absorb more of that part of it and feel really comfortable there. But what Kyogen brought, which was really kind of daunting and scary to notice that lack, was a particular way of inhabiting, of kind of being a figurehead and like attuning to the larger Sangha, and he was very skillful at that. He had a very good, very subtle, like, how he would respond to Sangha stuff, you know? And I feel like that's something that I want to get better at and feel is a need. Yeah.
I remember a long time ago, Kyoga and Gyokuko both were very determined about us being welcome to everybody, anybody who wants to practice Soto Zen. Mm-hmm. And so they were not strict, but they will call it when somebody is making joke or saying some bad mouthing about some particular way of value, that values or political thinking and stuff like that. And but now we are living in this ever more polarizing society, and I think we, in a way, we are having a hard time just doing that. I think we feel like we are easing into certain stance. Mm-hmm. And by that I feel like we probably it's almost like a shutting door to certain people. Mm-hmm. Who may want to practice Soto Zen. Mm-hmm. But not in tune with the culture here. And it's, to some extent, I feel like that's kind of inevitable to some extent. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for example, we became a welcoming congregation, and in my impression is that part of why we are doing this dialogue with evangelical Christians is, I think it's, to me, in my mind, it's a pair. Mm. We made our stance clear that we are also committed to keep talking to the other side of people, because otherwise we basically are rejecting sure. that side of the world. So I think it's a really tricky situation, and but I would just curious what your thoughts about sure. this kind of situation.
I see it as a variety of precept practice. So you know, like both individually and collectively, noticing where we lose the mark, right? And I think there's a certain inevitability of, like, you know, right this month, you know, politically the culture is quite pulled apart, but it's a bit of a, you know, it's a phenomenon. And so there's some shortcuts happening and some categorizing that's, you know, fairly coarse. And to kind of catch ourselves individually and, you know, as a group when we're, being a little too quick with a lumping, and there are some things that, you know, we're not going to tolerate here. The door is not open to everybody. You have to respect the practice, really. And if you're not willing to do that, then it's not fair to everyone else who's here. So, you know, the door is closed that degree. But within that, that's a pretty there's a lot of latitude. For how that looks, and you know, we just have to keep noticing when When we jump ahead of ourselves and we, you know, label something too soon. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
One thing that came up at a recent board of directors meeting was just how in Kyogen's passing, we kind of lost our ambassador to the larger Zen and Buddhist generally scene in North America. And I know that doing that kind of work isn't everybody's cup of tea. So I'm wondering to what extent you see yourself kind of following in Kyogen's footsteps there, or stepping into that kind of capacity. If
it's more my cup of muddy water.
I had a suspicion it might be.
Yeah. That's about 2/3 true. I would say that there's a variety of broader Zen communities, and Kyogen was really kind of a pivotal figure in the SEBA and AZTA. There's others, and Gyoko has less interest in that, but she's, and we all have maintained that presence. I think, yeah, personally, I have to kind of push myself to do that a bit. But I think partly that's a matter of timing, and I'm open to what that will be over time. Joshin is now on the board for the SEBA, so I think like as a sangha, we're gonna kind of, that's important. But I don't think the I don't have to hold all that happily. Yeah.
I'm still somewhat in awe of the time served by so many people in the sangha here, decades of practice. But as I look around, I see a lot of people that are maybe considerably older than you and might have considerably more life experience rather than temple practice. And I'm wondering if you get a sense of that being a concern to the Sangha, that the age and lay practice versus youth and temple practice.
Sure. Well, I'm not sure how the Sangha sees that. When I first started doing Sanzen, I was nervous about that, and that quickly dissolved as a worry, because I could see that it worked, and Sanzen is like doing like spiritual interview or something. When Kyogen and Gyoko started this, they were younger than me and had a lot less preparation, and the Sangha was an infant, and so now it's not. Now it's much larger and more complex and more seasoned. So it's a wholly different environment, but I don't see that as an obstacle. I feel like we have a treasury of breadth in teaching vehicles, and the leadership here is really quite broad. And so it doesn't land anywhere. It's more of a it's more emergent.
So my question kind of comes back to actually just the question that was just asked and also the job description. And I'm wondering how you see, like, your role as abbot playing out in projecting out a few years, because right now you're developmental director, you're also abbot pro tem, and you have a lot of hats on right now. And how does that work into the future, and can you really hold all those hats and do that and be abbot as well? There's a part of me that what I heard out of that nugget was the spiritual part of it, but also there was, like, you know, making sure that we're moving towards the objects in our strategic plan. But how do you as one person hold all those hats and be able to kind of function in a way that kind of serves the temple? And kind of looking forward to. I mean, I know right now we're in kind of a weird situation where we're doing a huge amount of things, but kind of looking forward, and how does that shake out for you?
I don't particularly imagine forward, but I don't see it as being that different. In a way we're kind of doing a lot right now, but we've always been doing a lot. It's just been different subject matter. And so life is very interesting. The two dovetail. They inform each other and express each other, and it doesn't feel that like an antagonistic between them.
I guess what I'm getting at is that where you were talking about how life experience was kind of an issue but really not an issue, and also the fact that authority kind of lands nowhere, and being a resident here, I kind of see that, but I also, like, most of my interactions on a number of different fronts are with you, and with you in particular, and you're making those decisions. Yeah. And that's part of my concern is we've got one person that I see that we're working with that has all these different hats on, and whenever at the top of an organization somebody has a lot of hats, for me, I get stressed and I get worried about it. Like, that's a lot to put onto one person, and how are they going to work in those situations? And you know, where is that ability for that to land everywhere?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think coming into this, my karmic baggage that I'm towing along tells me that there's not support, and I have to do it myself. Right, so that's kind of the default filter that I've met the world with, and it's absurd, and I've come a long way in kind of like learning how to notice that, hey, I'm looking through a filter and I can set that down and I'll look at all these options, and so that's what I would say is that I delegate a lot. One of the things I love about this is that I'm involved with so many people, sharing this. It doesn't feel like something that I'm creating. It feels like it's a very broad movement that I'm part of, and there will be periods when I'm defaulting and doing more than I can handle, and then there will be periods when I'm noticing that and I'm fixing it. So it's just, troubleshooting as we go.
Yes, that's what I was looking for, and that is kind of seeing that, and because there is a way that I see both of those, where you are, you're bringing so many people into the site. It's just amazing how many people come and see us, and that's because you're reaching out and you're bringing them in and letting them do work here. Mm-hmm. But there's also that part of, like you say, and I am the same way, where you kind of, I've got to do this and I've got to make this right. So thank you for saying that.
Which reminds me, I forgot to say this during announcements, but if anybody wants to spend a couple hours this afternoon working in the ravine, we've got a group from Columbia Land Trust volunteering here, and they'd love to have some help. We've got two over here.
From where you sit now, can you say anything about your vision for ways you want the Sangha to grow, not physically grow, but, you know, just directions that you would change a little bit or emphasize?
You know, I don't know if I can. I really feel like it's what shows up when I look for that is, I mean, there's some like some superficial kind of stuff, you know. But I'm kind of trying to get at something more real there. But what comes up when I try to distill it down is that, you know, each person doing their work, and like, I want us to get better at supporting that, and you know, that's always happening.
It's always happening that we're getting better at it.
Well, that hopefully that internal work is an active process, and that as a container, we are refining our ability to catalyze that work. So okay. not that specific, but it really comes down to like each of our individual you know, emergings. And I don't like that's what matters, and I don't want to like guess what that would look like in its aggregate.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, my question was twofold. Gyoshi just asked the first part of it, but the second part is I'd like to know what your heartfelt wish for not just the Sangha, but for yourself, and where you see what's important to you as an individual.
Well, I want to know that this lineage, like, is healthy, like that it's moving on through time. I feel like that's a particular responsibility that, like, I want to safeguard that. And so that means that as a temple, we're stable enough and skillful enough to make that happen.
Thank you.
Thanks. I've been thinking in my own life a lot about the, and I don't know exactly how to describe it other than ambition, kind of a drive, a willingness to step into places of leadership to affect change. And I used to lean away from that feeling because I associated leadership with negative things. Or ambition, the word ambition with negative things and kind of selfish things. And I think my question is more general, and maybe some specific things will come up about being stepping into the leadership roles here. But how can we look at ambition through a Buddhist lens, and what is our drive to step into leadership and do things?
Sure.
How can we do that in a responsible way?
Great. Relevant question. I would say that getting to know the individual ambitions, and some of them are, you know, they're rooted very deep, and they're very wholesome and unselfish, and you know, it's a yearning that this is better. You know, it's a you know, just responding to the suffering we see in front of us, and it's just there's no residue with that. Like, it's just obvious, and like, we're powerful people and we want to help, right? So of course we want to put ourselves in the best position to cause as much good as possible. So, you know, that feels a certain way. And it also feels a certain way when, like, you know, we want to, like, take this extra step and notice, like, oh, how does that look on me, and whatever, or now I can also do this little thing, talking about a side project, or, you know, whatever it may be, all the... So those moments of ambition, you know, that as that intent arises, it feels a certain way, and it's just knowing the varieties, knowing who we are as we experience different versions of that. And, you know, when it's one that, you know, we know is going to lead down this tortuous route to, you know, not feeding that one energy. Yeah. Which is, you know, part of, you know, my answer to Zoki is that, like, you know, in terms of this heartfelt wish for this sangha, like, you know, the other one there that is prominent for me is I want us to, I feel like we've spent a lot of time reaching a level of kind of maturity as a group, and you know, Kyogen talked about this a bit near the end about it kind of being time to also, like, be looking out and having that effect ripple farther than within these walls. And that, to me, feels like just an enormous opportunity, and I want to facilitate that.
Yeah, I was kind of coming back to that point because it was a breakfast we had a while ago, and Gyoko was talking about leverage, and then she also kind of turned to you and said that she didn't want to push that too hard because you have that idea of kind of leveraging even further out into a broader environment, like you were just saying there. And I was wondering if there was, it almost seemed like in that moment, like there was a kind of a specific thing, like you were like, yes, this is kind of where I see things going, but I'm not hearing that in the questions. That would kind of just something I was projecting onto you. Do you remember? I'm sorry.
I remember the conversation. I don't have a specific. No, but I feel like there's. We're to a point where we have more responsibility, and I don't want to kind of glide past that.
So, kind of building on that. Coming from working for a for-profit business for decades and then coming into here and seeing us change from, and I never really was very aware of all the numbers, but seeing us change from kind of a place where we had buildings, we didn't have to worry so much, and we had, you know, enough money to kind of keep us going, and now we're a multi-million dollar organization, and we have a huge amount of money that we have to put out every single month to kind of keep this place going. And there's a concern in me of, like, how do we find that balance between what we really are truly is a religious organization, and that's really kind of has to be kind of core of what we do and how we practice everything, but there's also a business side to things that we can't. The other day, because the PPNL wasn't billing us to the correct address, they came out and they were going to turn the power off to the workshop, but it was their mistake, and so we were just able to say, hey, you know, I'm sorry, you're not even billing us the right address, and so they went away and we took care of it. But if we hadn't been doing that, if they had billed us and we hadn't paid it, all the compassion and all the explaining in the world, they'd have said, really, well, I'm sorry, and there would have been our power. And so how do we kind of, as we grow and we just have so many more things we're doing and a lot more financial responsibility, how do we kind of, do you see us moving or changing a little bit of how we work so that there is a little bit more kind of attunement to the business side of things are being done in a particular way and on time? It's just,
I think that it's a kind of maturing of who we are as an organization. And I think that that's been underway for a while now. And it's a work in progress, but I feel like what we're doing is solid and sustainable, and we've gone through a very kind of risky, dicey stage. But we've maintained who we are through that, and both in terms of numbers and in terms of flavor. And I think we'll probably grow over time, but I'm not like that's not the aim. It's just if we do, that'll make things a little bit easier. But for me, the focus has to be on, you know, the internal work and the, like, if we're doing that, then the admin will take care of it. And that's what we've seen over time. And I'm not saying that, like part of, like, well, whatever.
Yeah, I guess
we've had this conversation before.
Exactly. I guess I don't see that as much, and I don't see, I would say that you're talking about the fact that we're kind of through that point, and I think we're in the midst of it myself, as far as like still, and I hope we don't really grow financially and grow more building, to develop this site basically, but I'm not talking about like growing further. It's just more of like how we work to just kind of manage things and keep things going. And you know, we have tons and tons of people who help us, but it's also just, it's a lot of people working very hard and trying to get things done, and how that works out and how we progress on and keep the bills
so
paid.
So the content keeps changing, you know, but it's how it's always been, you know.
Boy, being abbot is just huge. It's a big job. It's a very complex job. How has this Gisei term been for you? And are you getting what you need out of this Gisei term?
It hasn't been as... it's been much more gradual than I thought it would be, really. So it's not, you know, like they, you know, we talk about ceremonies happening kind of after the fact. And so it, like this transition is taking place over a decade. And, you know, we're well into it. And so that... It hasn't been that abrupt, like, oh, like, now it's like this. And yesterday it wasn't. And so that's the first part of the question. And the second part is in terms of, like, how am I getting what I need? I think I am. You know, I love life, and it's, I'm challenged daily, and
And thank you for being willing, because wanting, when you were saying that wanting isn't the right word, to me the right word is willing. So thank you for that.
Got maybe two more. Allison and Suho.
So I just wanted to start by saying that your commitment to the Sangha is really evident. You just ooze it, which, like, is really comforting. But at the same time, and this is the social worker in me coming out and asking this question, but when you put so much of yourself into something, it's really easy to lose yourself in that. And I get that, you know, the abbot position requires a lot of that, but... How are you going to take care of yourself, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Sure. It's funny because there's an extra wrinkle, because it's not like most jobs, because, you know, it's so much of life. I mean, you're living here, and like it's just, it's very thorough. And so a lot of my supports and, you know, like, avenues of nourishment are, like, intrinsically wrapped up into this. And so it's not like, oh, how do I carve out, like... that being said, Like, I have a pretty good nose for boundaries, I really am committed to showing up in a way that is useful. And if I'm not attuned to kind of how I'm doing, then I'm not going to do that, right? Then I'm not going to bring the resource needed. And so I take care of myself, and I guess I trust that. I've seen that work through enough difficulty that I feel like that's one I've got down pretty well.
So I think my question is, why this, though? I think the want.
What is this?
Why this? There's lots of ways you could express your Dharma now, where you are with your practice, and where you are with the Sangha. You talked about lineage. There's lots of ways you could express this lineage. And so I think when I heard Madeline's question last week, I know the want kind of, and you addressed that earlier, but I think what's sitting underneath it still for me is, why this, though? There's lots of choice. Why this?
Well, you know, this is what's calling me. This is saying my name. And so that's what I'm responding to. I think that's been really, that's true both kind of metaphorically, but also in a very kind of concrete way. And I see that it's a fit. I don't know. I didn't engineer that. I didn't plan that. I certainly didn't think this is what was going to happen. But now I recognize it. So it's an observation rather than a decision, I think.